Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to Rule the Roost podcast. I am Jack, the Trunk, and I'm joined by Raj, the Bones. How are you doing, mate?
No, then, I'm not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm okay, thanks. I don't know, I tried to go on like a socially awkward thing this time, and I don't even know why I'm pretending to be socially awkward, because I am, really.
Bless you.
Yeah, I'm a bit all over the place, mate. I'm just struggling to recover from what was possibly one of the most exciting weeks as a Tottenham Hotspur supporter. Especially this weekend's game against Cardiff was an absolute barnstormer, wasn't it?
I mean, it must have been a treat for you, given it was your birthday just beforehand. It's exactly what you wanted to see, I imagine.
Yeah, perfect hangover viewing that. I shouldn't be so cynical. We'll jump in. It's very good to get a result after playing in the Europa League. It helps to dispel a bit of the nonsense that you hear about the Europa League being responsible for the derailment of our season.
Especially after we did that ad-libbed shit game last week when we went through all our results and half blamed it on all the Europa League games afterwards. We'd lost to go against that and win a game, no matter what the performance was like, actually get the points on the board. That's probably the most positive thing to take out of it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there, mate. We'll start on Dnipro. We won't go into that one too much. We all know what happened. We went a goal down. All hope was lost. And then we managed to pull it back. It was described by Paul Jiggins as Sherwood's tactical mastermind, master stroke, I should say. I think it was he masterminded a 3-1 comeback victory. I'm not so sure I'd go quite that far.
Talk about playing fast and loose with the word fucking mastermind.
Well, that's it. It was a good result, though, nonetheless.
Was Paul Jiggins the same one that wrote something ridiculous about AVB as well? Was he the one that did the old AVB players in revolt business at the start of last season?
Exactly him, yeah. He's one of Harry Redknapp's best mates.
It's hardly surprising.
No. You think there was an agenda or something. Everyone loves that word at the moment, agenda. That seems to be the buzz phrase. If you say anything on Twitter, if you say, I didn't really rate Poligno this week, someone will come in and thinking they're all clever and go, oh, you've got an agenda against him, don't you? No, I just think he should probably work a bit harder.
This week's version of narrative then, is it?
Exactly that. So we came back. Got to give Mr. Adebayor a shout out for his second goal. Absolutely fantastic. The stadium in pretty good voice, as helped by the 1882 lads down in blocks 35 and 36, and a fitting tribute as well to young Tom Van Heeren. But I don't really want to dwell on that too much. We're into the next round. We're against Benfica. I'd love to be positive, but it's going to be a very, very tough game for us, that one. I don't know if you've seen their form, mate, but it's similar to... probably not so comparable in terms of the competition they're facing, but it's similar to Bayern Munich-esque form. I should probably have pulled up the extra stats, but yeah, they've won a lot of games.
Yeah, they're fantastic. I mean, it's between them, really, and a handful of clubs in in Portugal, Porto and Sporting have fallen off in the past few years, but they're a fantastic side domestically. They've been doing well in Europe as well. I think they're the Champions League dropouts, aren't they?
Indeed, they are,
so
yeah.
We fell foul of Basel in a similar position last year, and we've been previously linked to Jorge Jesus, who's in charge of him. He's a more than capable manager. So it'll be interesting to see how we play against him. And I think that could be one where, you know, an experienced European manager such as him might just have the guile to outfox Sherwood, who's much, much less experienced in comparison.
Their current sequence is unbeaten in 20 at the moment. In all competitions, they're unbeaten. Or is that all competitions? Possibly not, but essentially they're unbeaten in their last 20 games. That may well be league.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, it's still slightly worrying, isn't it? An interesting little thing to have a look at regarding the game is have a little look at their stadium. It should add a bit of spice to the fans who are travelling away, as the Emirates was actually modelled upon Benfica Stadium. Essentially, that's how soulless and corporate world football is becoming now, that stadiums are almost becoming like these flat pack things that can just be erected, across the land and sea. But yeah, have a little look at the stadium alike. It is a carbon copy of the Emirates. Well, the Emirates is a carbon copy of the stadium alike. So hopefully we can go out there and get a result and try and claim some sort of result in an Arsenal stadium, maybe. Is that tenuous? Is that small club? Right?
That's where the Champions League final is going to be there this year at Estadio de Luz. So I'm sure they'll be disappointed that they won't be in the competition to try and get there themselves. But as you say, it's exactly the same, even down to the club colours. Benfica playing red and white as well, to a degree. So it's almost the Emirates with different sponsors, which is interesting to see. But I mean, you know, didn't we play a team in, was it Braga or someone like that, that actually called themselves Arsenal or something like that?
Yeah,
that,
yes.
We played as well, so, you know, we seem to get picked against these teams fairly often.
Horrible. Smelly teams. We've got a smelly team this week, but we'll go to the smelly fixture we had this weekend first of all. Cardiff City, we touched on it at the start of the show. Roberto Soldado, lovely to see the man score, and a brilliant goal at that, brilliant finish. And the relief washing over him as if he'd taken some sort of illicit serotonin controlling substance was a joy to behold.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, I had a massive grin on my face the second he scored. I think the crowd had an extra bit of a cheer when his name was read out and when the goal went in. And then the way the players responded to how much it meant to him as well was absolutely lovely. It's kind of overshadowed the game itself to some degree because, you know, Adebayor, those images of him waving everyone over, clearly, you know, he's Billy Big Bollocks again. So he's got everyone round his little finger telling them what to do, which is good to see, having leaders on the field. And there's a moment where he puts his head in his hands and then Andras Townsend sort of jumps ahead of him and then he almost falls into Aaron Lennon's arms behind him because he's just that... He almost goes floppy, you know, when you're that happy or that emotion comes over you, you kind of just almost want to flop to the floor. I think if nobody was around him, he almost would have done like... You know when you see him win at Wimbledon, and they always do that fall to the knees and on the back and what have you, that sort of business.
I like how you just described it as, have you ever been so happy you've gone floppy? And yeah, I can say that I have.
To a certain degree, you could argue at your veriest happy moment, that is when you go floppy.
Yeah, if you get that far, sometimes you can kind of, you know, go floppy because you're so happy dash nervous. And then... It doesn't go properly floppy. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I do know what I'm talking about, and you all know what I'm talking about too.
I think we're trying to compare a bit of Soldado's form to an erection.
I wasn't doing that. I was just merely talking about how you were, you know, the tennis players, Wimbledon collapsing, all that shit. What did you make of Cardiff? What did you make of the game, though, mate? Is Adebayor a potential captain?
I wouldn't put him as a captain myself because he almost has that sort of... we talked about it before, that Jeff Shreve's interview where he has that complex to himself where he already feels like he carries an almost the nation of Togo himself. So I wouldn't want him to be any sort of impression that he's carrying Tottenham, although the statistics this season with how many goals and assists he's putting in probably equate to that somewhat. But I wouldn't give him the captaincy. I don't think, given what's come before, his behaviour with previous managers and the such, I don't think it's befitting of a man to be captain. I don't think there's anyone that I'd want to strip it from. And I think there's people who are probably before him in line to take it off Dawson, if that's the case going forward.
I'd have to say, given that we've dug the knife into him in recent weeks, he an absolutely outstanding performance against Cardiff, I felt, this weekend from Messrs. Dawson and Vertonghen, but in particular, Mr. Dawson. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. And this is the kind of fixture we've spoken about in the past where he really does shine.
It's sort of a level, isn't it, Cardiff? Yeah. It's not, you know, they're not the best team in the world. They'll probably be relegated this season with some games to spare, and they're the ones where he's useful in our squad. He's the ones where he'll have his head on the end of everything. The strikers won't have an inch against him because he's at a level where he's comfortable against them and he won't be turned too often. And they're the games where he's still part of our squad and very much useful. It's when he starts playing in possibly against Benfica and against the better sides in the Premier League that you worry.
Paulinho again. Two successful tackles, looked a bit of a passenger, didn't create any chances in the entire game. His passing was way off, way down, less than half of what Carl Norton's was, who, you know, to be fair to him, had a pretty decent game on the ball. Do you think he's still recovering from injury? Is it World Cup syndrome? I don't even know if that is a syndrome. Have I just created that? I think I have, maybe. But just in the respect that, is he not overexerting himself because he's going to his home nation to play in front of the world and try and win the World Cup, thus doesn't want to fuck that up to finish fifth or sixth for Tottenham?
I don't know. I think it might be unfair and slightly overextending ourselves to accuse him of somewhat cynically holding himself back so that he can perform the best in the World Cup. It's something that's said in the press sometimes towards the end of the season, you know, when players are often accused of being on the beach if they're mid-table and they've not got really anything to play for anymore. There's some players who are looking forward to having a good World Cup that don't want to get injured, so they might take themselves out of the firing line for their clubs a little bit more. But I wouldn't want to fall into the trap of doing that. I'd be interested to see how he performs for Brazil. See how they use him, see how he plays there and what function he has and if he looks slightly more enthused in that sort of environment, because it might give us a fairer reflection of his mentality when he pulls on the Tottenham shirt, and perhaps that's something for us to ponder once we've seen that. But in a blind view, I wouldn't want to accuse him of kind of, you know, holding himself back for any reason.
What did you make of Stephen Corker's performance as well, mate?
He was solid. I mean, we didn't give him much to think about. He's in the England squad, even though, you know, Cardiff are on a bad run of form. And he's, as I said, the Cardiff lads told us they're hemorrhaging goals, which they didn't seem to attribute any sort of blame at all to him. So it'll be a good experience for him. Whether or not he actually gets in the World Cup squad is another thing. But given that there's that possibility, that strong rumour that we have first dibs if he comes back in the summer, if Cardiff were to be relegated, I don't think I'd say no, because I think we are in a position where we need another centre-back. And if he's to come in, naturally slot back in, having been at the club already, I mean, his temperament and his want for first-team football is something that's been called into question before. So whether or not he as a person wants to come back to the club is another matter entirely. But it's yet to be seen. I think he's grown up a lot at Cardiff, giving him the armband and what have you. I mean, after we accused him last week of bottling performances like Leeds away, and then the Cardiff lads have said that he's performed well in their derbies and he's stood up head and shoulders above most players and performed for them and fought for them as hard as he can. I think he's been a good good year for him. If it does become like a lone season for him, it can only be a positive on our behalf, unless we end up like spending more money on him to bring him back or what have you. But I can't see that happening. Cardiff can't hold us to ransom if he goes down. There'll probably be that clause in place already.
Well, the way he played, if I was to be honest, I'd have him over Dawson, but I still am not convinced that either one of them is good enough for a club without aspirations, I should say. Not saying they're not good enough for our club, saying not good enough for a club without aspirations. It's a very big difference.
I don't think they're on the same level as Kirakesh and Vertonghen. They probably are our first-choice centre-back pairing, even though they probably both prefer the same side of centre-back. They're both left-sided centre-backs, and it depend on who'd want to step over there. I don't think have they ever played together in a two properly? I'm not entirely sure they have.
No, my only concern as well about Kirakesh is that he's appalling in the air as well. And for a centre-back, that does worry me slightly.
I mean, Vertonghen can probably take that mantle up for him if that's the way it goes. He can drop deeper and attribute himself more to the aerial duels and leave Kirakesh to mop up on the floor, because they're both ball-playing defenders. If you want to give him like a...
And don't get me wrong, Kirakesh, I think, is a brilliant player. I think he's the way he's adapted to English football, seamless. I think he had, a game and a half where he looked a bit ropey, and obviously the management said to him, look, mate, you can't run into the box in the Premier League when you play as a centre-back, because the strikers are, and most of the midfielders, are really, really fast, and it's a really athletic game here. So if you do want to have a bit of a surge, just try and limit it to maybe once or not at all, as opposed to every 5 minutes. But as soon as he's got that ironed out, he's looking really good. But we are in possibly one of the smelliest patches we've been in for quite some time now. Not only do we have two games against Benfica coming up, and a match against the old enemy, the horrible Arsenal, are coming to town. First of all, we have a journey to Stamford Bridge. So let's talk to some horrible Chelsea scumbags. So, yeah, joining us once again on Roll the Roost is Mr. Joe Tweed of Plains of Almeria. Hello, Joe. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, very well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Good to have you back. You weren't shooed away by Raj's questioning of your moral fibre on the last one,
though. Oh, no. Actually, he's probably be disgusted. I'm moving to a bank in about 2 weeks' time. So, there's even more outrage and disgust to be had.
Oh, good. God. I might have to tweet one of those disgusting individuals and link to your Twitter profile, because that really is damnation there.
That's pretty horrific. Yeah, thanks for that as well.
And we're also joined this evening by my mate Fred. Hello, Fred. How are you doing, mate?
Hello. I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. You're a Chelsea fan as well, aren't you, Fred?
I am. I've been a Chelsea fan all my life.
Did you like it when you won the Champions League?
No, I didn't like that, actually. I didn't like that one very much. No.
No, one of the shitter nights of being a Chelsea fan, I imagine. So it's, well, let's start with your season so far, lads. You're kind of becoming a ruthlessly efficient Bayern Munich-esque machine at the moment. You're steamrolling the Premier League. You haven't lost since bloody December. What's going on? Is it the Mourinho factor, or is it just that you've got loads of well good players?
it's probably a lot to do with Mourinho, and it's probably a lot to do with the players as well. I think it's probably quite fair to say that it took quite a while to get going. I think Mourinho's probably his biggest strength is just winning games when you kind of look at the performance and kind of sort of scratch your head as to how we've won that game or won it comfortably. But probably, from maybe the Liverpool game before Christmas, from then onwards, we've put in some really stellar performances, and probably the City away game was arguably the best Chelsea game in terms of a performance I've seen in 2, 3, 4 years. Bit off the boil recently, but I think we've got a lot of players who are playing regularly, a couple of games sort of, every few days. So I think there's a bit of tiredness there, but I'm kind of hoping that A few of them have been rested up for the game this weekend. But I mean, it's all heading in the right direction. Taking a little while to get there, but I'm really, really happy with how the team's progressing now.
It seemed as though at the start of the season, he for want of a better expression, Mourinho looked like a man who was a bit shagged out. Like he kind of you'd see him in interviews and stuff, and it was like, that's not Mourinho. Like he just seemed a bit dejected, and it kind of maybe this going back to Chelsea, it wasn't the best of ideas. But now. No. You can't help but think, was it just a big double bluff? Is this that evil Portuguese mastermind that he is? He seems to be in full swing again now. And much to my delight, I must say, mugging off Arsene Wenger incessantly, which is brilliant to see.
I think he always had to do something different, though, when he came back this time. I mean, he was never going to be able to come back and be, you know, the new kid on the block like he was last time. When he showed up last time, it was like, you know, a bomb went off in the Premier League. Like no one had really had someone just come out and be so out there like he was. And I think this time round he had to do something a bit different, I think.
He pretty much, as you say, like the last time he came into the league, he pretty much just went into his first press conference and got his knob out.
Basically, you know? He rolled out on the desk and was
windmilled
like,
the press.
This is what I've got. Yeah, it was quite something before. And I think people didn't really quite know what to make of it. I think this time round, he's well aware of how the English press works, and he's probably well aware of how he's expected to sort of show up and the sort of tricks he's expected to pull. And I feel like, you know, perhaps initially he was trying to make an effort to not go down that route and perhaps to sort of just ease into it a bit, you know. I don't know.
It's funny because as a Spurs fan, like you see there's so much vitriol directed towards him, and you feel obliged to hate him. But I don't know about you, Raj, but I can't help but kind of like Mourinho in a way. Like he does frustrate me, and I do think sometimes he takes it a little bit too far. But even like when he was taking the piss out of us for the Willian transfer, which we'll go on to a little bit later on, but just his whole kind of manner about the transfer, how he was just he made some jibe about, yeah, he essentially said, and we want to thank Tottenham for saving us a bit of time on, you know, performing the medical because it sped up the process. I can't remember what it was. He made some joke that I thought...
You saved us a flight, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It was only Ryanair. It was Daniel Levy, mate. So,
Levy probably carried him from those.
No, you know, he genuinely flew Roberto Soldado in on Ryanair. So maybe that explains Soldado's performances for most of the season. He flew me in on Ryanair. I'll show him. He wants a Ryanair player. I'll give him a Ryanair player. But what about you, Raj? I mean, how do you feel about Mourinho? Because I'll be honest, like a man that can genuinely elicit that much rage from Arsene. Because Arsene Wenger tried it. You know, he tried to play the mind games with Mourinho, and he just failed spectacularly. Like it was completely egg on his face, if you like. I'm sensing you maybe don't like him.
No, I don't mind him whatsoever. Actually, he's probably the only thing about Chelsea that I find mildly tolerable. he comes across quite well in his press conferences, and he actually has a personality. He tends to probably ignore the press training he's had at any club he's been at, and given that he's been at some of the biggest clubs in the world, at Inter Milan and you know, Real Madrid, these huge clubs with great histories, that they'll have taught him a lot, and he just doesn't act like a man befitting of his position, really, which is a breath of fresh air in some respects. So I can't hold him back in that. And as you say, his tendency to wind up Arsene Wenger to a degree that most people can't is brilliant, because Wenger always manages to come up second best to him, which is, you know, if there's one thing that Chelsea can do, it's beat Arsenal, and that's one thing that'll always put a smile on our face, no matter who's playing him.
I think what I have to give Mourinho as well is that wherever he goes, he manages to, and very quickly, implement his trademark style onto the team. He definitely has a fingerprint, and he takes that everywhere
he
goes.
Fingerprints actually on Tito Villanova's eye, if you look closely enough.
Yeah. But it didn't work at Madrid, for example, because Madrid have their own a style unto their own.
He came in his first season and beat probably the best club side that there ever will be to the title. What was it, record points and record goals? Second season there were some falling outs, but I mean, if you look at now under Ancelotti, the big one was him dropping Casillas, and I don't think I've seen Casillas play when I've seen Madrid play this season. I think it was just one of those things where, particularly second season, that you know there was a lot of egos going on there. Mourinho has one, obviously the Real Madrid players do, but you know, to say it was a not necessarily a success. I mean, he absolutely tore Barcelona to pieces in his first season there in terms of the actual league performance. I mean, that you know, Barcelona team, I despise them with every fibre of my being, but they were absolutely phenomenal.
No, indeed. I didn't say it wasn't a success, by the way. I just said that it didn't work in that because Madrid have their own style. I think
Madrid's a special case because I think it was his second season where he did better against Barcelona. I think the first season he got beaten 5-0 at home in the league by Barcelona, which wasn't the greatest achievement ever. I think Guardiola had him there. I think it's the second season, definitely. He's always done well in his second season at clubs. I mean, Chelsea in his first time there, he was fantastic in his second year, even built on what he'd built in that first year where he'd run away with the league and did it again in the second. Inter Milan, they won the treble in the second year. Madrid is when he won the league, and he won the Copa del Rey at one point as well against Barcelona in one of the finals, 1-0. So that's when he really kicks on. But it's all about the clicks, really. It was a strange Iberian little it's a tete-a-tete that he had with all the Spanish players, because you know Casillas is the ringleader for them. He's the national captain, and he sort of cast him to one side. And he seems to make the big calls, and it usually seems to be at the expense of a Spanish player. I mean, this season, if you look at Juan Mata now, he's poor lad's in the middle of nowhere at Manchester with the. You know, he's not in the Spain side anymore. He's got a manager that doesn't seem to know his arse from his tit in any sort of fashion. And he's made that big call by dropping him, and Chelsea have been better off for it. He made the call to play Diego Lopez, as you alluded to, instead of Casillas in the league, and he's retained his place, and Casillas is still their cup keeper. So he has a fantastic record of making big decisions and getting them right.
I think it's
and obviously Azpilicueta as well, playing him at the moment at left back ahead of Ashley Cole. You know, even last season Ashley Cole was still, you know, fantastic left back and one of the top left backs when you think of them in the world, you know. And I think you know, initially people weren't sure about that call either, but he seems to have got that one right as well, and that's a big call, you know, in a World Cup year.
He's been a revelation, hasn't he? He's been absolutely fantastic for you this year.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He sounds like something that a British person would order off a menu on holiday in Spain, doesn't it? Like, I'll have a unos aspilicueta, please, mate.
They call him Dave, don't
they? Do you call him Dave? It's like the Villa fans calling Anthony Luna Tony Moon, which I quite like that one. But yeah, so it's looking like you are the most convincing team for the title this year. City are obviously a very strong team, but to me it feels more like City are a team that I'm not overly convinced by Pellegrini, to be honest with you. And it almost feels like they're getting by a lot of the time on essentially just the raw strength of the squad that they have at their disposal, which I might even argue is stronger than Chelsea's. But I think you guys have much more of a game plan. I think you're a much more organised outfit than they are. I think you're a lot more, hell of a lot more kind of efficient. Perhaps not quite as ruthless and, you know, caution to the wind as they are. But even still, I personally, I can't look past Chelsea for the title, to be honest.
I think the interesting thing is going to be, because by the time we play, I think Saturday, I think they're playing Sunday. I mean, we could arguably be, you know, 9 points clear of them. How will they react? And I know it's all they've got, obviously, the three games in hand, but the fixture congestion that they've got coming up, they've got the FA Cup, obviously Champions League second leg. They've got to find somewhere to play these three additional games that they're now behind us. You know, whether this is going to sort of have an accumulative effect and it's going to catch up with them, I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, when their fourth best striker is, you know, Jovetic and our top striker is Eto, you know, the kind of difference between, I think, as you were saying there, in terms of the strength of squads, I think that they've got far more firepower. But I'm just hoping that Mourinho's just got a little bit more know-how in closing out league titles. That may well be the difference. But I think it's probably going to be quite interesting And, you know, it will probably come down to Aston City. I'm not wholly convinced by Liverpool. You know, their first half against Southampton, they could have been three or four down at half time, by some sort of very poor finishing from Southampton. But, you know, I'm hopeful that we'll do it. And I'm you know, quietly confident that with their fixture congestion, we might just pip them a point or two. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really, really hopeful on that respect.
Do you know, you mentioned Liverpool there. I've got to say, like, mainly because of where I grew up, as Freddie well knows, it is a predominantly Chelsea area. So I've always had the kind of the hatred for Chelsea more than I have for Arsenal. But still, for me as a Spurs fan, it's always been Chelsea and Arsenal. But I would honestly say this year, I cannot stand Liverpool. Like, I cannot stand them. I had to ask myself, you know, is this just because they're essentially doing what we should have done this year, capitalising on Man United's demise and sealing a place in the top four? Undeniably so. There probably is a bit of jealousy there. But at the same time, it's just like the way their fans have been so silent for the past few years, and now they're just piping up again and acting like they're just, yeah, the best.
They all piped up in the last few days, haven't they? They've suddenly come out of the woodwork a bit.
Did anyone see the Adrian Durham article online today? Not that I would ever recommend reading Adrian Durham, but if you
I was going to say, do you want to get your coat, Joe? Or like,
No. I'm fully aware that he's just sort of a click whore, but, you know, I mean, he actually wrote an article, 10 reasons on why Liverpool should win the league title. And I think one of them, yeah, it was the eighth or ninth reason, was like the most preposterous nonsense I think I've ever read, yeah, about Steven Gerrard. But I mean, it's all going to happen, you know, in terms of if they actually do win the league title, you will not hear the end of it until the beginning of next season. I just cannot, you know, I cannot really grasp, or, you know, I wouldn't be able to get my head around the fact that they could win the league.
I don't think that with a defence like they've got, I really don't think they can. Yeah,
I can't see them winning the league either. I mean, they're almost like the opposite to Chelsea, aren't they, Liverpool? Because they won't stop going on about their history, and Chelsea won't stop going on about their new version of theirs. So they're almost like if you like combined and almost did like an Arsenal type merger, you might actually get one whole club there.
See, might be as good as Man United.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely silence there, mate. Definitely silence.
No, it's water off the duck's back from a Northern Tottenham fan. So,
do you attribute a lot of this rise of Eden Hazard to Mourinho's stewardship, or do you think he was always going to be the kind of player that he seems? Because he that boy looks special, and not special in the derogatory way. Like, he looks special in a. In the completely opposite way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know about Fred, but I mean, I think really this season, Mourinho has obviously sort of got in his ear and told him, if you want to be a complete player, you might have to, you know, kind of put in a shift defensively. And actually seeing him in some games chase back 30, 40 yards and put in a slide tackle is sometimes slightly more enjoyable than seeing him beat four people and stick it in the top corner. You know, he's really developing into a complete player. I mean, that piece of skill he did against Fulham was just outrageous. But he's kind of developing that kind of dropper thing about him, where when you need something to happen, he tends to be the player that's doing it. And it does tend to be in big games. I mean, I don't know what Fred thinks about that, but I mean, that's kind of where I'm seeing Hazard heading, to be really sort of the major, you know, obviously the major player in the team, and kind of the one that you would look to really turn it on in big games.
Well, I could only agree with that, really. I just think, you know, last season, when you think about, you know, some of the performances he put in, he often looked like he was very much playing for himself. Because he is a selfish player. I mean, but that's part of his, you know, part of his charm. That's part of his, what makes him such a difficult player to play against. But certainly, a marked difference in what you see from him this season is that he is tracking back. I think as well, you know, you've got to say that when Mourinho is willing to drop Chelsea's player of the season the last two seasons and then sell him on, you know, to United because he's surplus to requirements, that certainly would give a player who plays in sort of similar positions to him, you know, as one of those three who plays behind the one man up front. It would certainly give a young player like Eden Hazard, you can imagine, quite a bit of confidence in that the manager backs him. And now I think because he does the extra work for the team, because he's all over the pitch, you see that as soon as other players get the ball, they're looking for him. They're looking to get the ball to him. And, you know, you see that all the time. And when he gets the ball, I think defenders are now afraid of him. Whereas I think last season he was liable to run up blind alleys. He was liable to, overcomplicate things. And I think this season he's looking much more like a kind of complete player. And, you've got to put that down to Mourinho's work.
I'd almost liken it to, and this isn't going to be very popular with you two, and probably a lot of our listeners, but Raj will know what I'm saying. So Mr. Gareth Bale under AVB stewardship. I mean, Gareth Bale himself has said that it was pretty much AVB who pushed him onto that next level. And I would say it appears that Eden Hazard and Mourinho have very much a similar thing, as you've pretty much said there, that he was to call them raw talents is not really accurate. But to say a player's gone from being a very, very good player into a world-class footballer, is probably accurate. And I mean, whatever you say about AVB, I've still got a lot of time for the man. One of the things I feel that he was establishing at Tottenham was just that we had a system in place that wasn't always the best, but it was still there. But I think what he definitely lacked that Mourinho has is more conviction in himself, in what he was doing. And I think that's ultimately his undoing that filters down with AVB, that when he does get these, for example, if you liken Mata and Adebayor, the way in which the two things have been handled, Mourinho just openly said, look, I've told one, he's a great player. We love having him here. He's a great footballer. But at the same time, I've got other players that I'd rather play. And he was always very upfront about that. And even when the press would say to him, you saw countless interviews when the press would say to him, why the hell aren't you playing Wan Mata? He would just openly say, because I think Oscar works better. I think Oscar works better. And he was convinced in himself and what it was that he was doing. With AVB, it kind of felt at times that when people would pose these questions to him, there was just that glint of, why am I doing that, actually? Or, stop asking me these questions. Stop trying to force me into a hole. Stop trying to make me commit to saying something, when he maybe could have just at times said, look, me and whatever's happened with me and Adebayor, there's a personal thing there. If we can work it out, then of course I'll put him in the team. But for the time being, I think to playing him would have a negative effect on the team. That's all you needed to say, but it just got built into such a big issue, and there was so much kind of guff around it that it all seemed to implode on him.
They're very different personalities, though, aren't they, ABB and Mourinho?
Of course,
in terms of...
And they're all Portuguese, mate. They're all the same, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, you know it is, mate. Mourinho, I think Mourinho, with his history as well, and the fact that he has a following at Chelsea already in the dressing room, Mourinho, I think, can show up. I mean, it's certainly an advantage that we're seeing this season. Mourinho's been able to show up, hit the ground running, and he's able to make these big calls without losing the dressing room, because people back him, because people have seen the success that he's brought to the club in the past, and the success that he's brought to other clubs. And don't get me wrong, we all know ABB's track record before the Premier League was impressive. But I think as such a young manager coming into Tottenham, and obviously this is more your yard than it's mine, I don't know everything about it, but if you show up there and try and instigate these changes that ruffle people's feathers a bit, if you haven't got that kind of backing and that kind of heavyweight sort of conviction, in the changes you're making, I think you can lose that dressing room and that sort of respect.
I think the biggest difference between... Go on.
No, I was just saying, I think I rambled a bit there. You guys go on.
No, it's fine. I think the biggest difference between Mourinho and AVB for me, you dwelled on it, but the difference in their age can't be looked down on too much, because I think there's 15 years between them now, Mourinho being 51 and AVB's only just got about 36, which is ridiculous given how much he's done already in the game and the experience he has. But the youngest manager to win the Premier League, as you well know, is Mourinho when he was 42 in his first season. So that's another 6 years of experience that AVB would have under his belt in top-flight management before he was in a similar position to Mourinho was when he won it. And that game time, like it or not, is where Mourinho, where not just Mourinho, but other managers cut their teeth in given experience. I mean, you've seen it with Ferguson when he got older. He may not have got involved with the coaching side as much, but he had the experience behind him to get there. And that's why people tend to want older, more figurehead managers with more established names at the clubs, why we're so heavily linked with the likes of Van Gaal. It's because people more feel more comfortable under older hands, don't they? Which is why, I mean, in the, oh. Well, you know, as you were.
There has been a Wenger floating about, so you might want to cut the YouTube chat.
Hashtag Ask Wenger. That's a good bit of comedy gold. Sorry, Raj, carry on, mate, before we start talking about...
It's all right, the paedophile interlude was perfect timing.
No, you can't say the alleged... the alleged man of questionable character... Interlude.
Yeah, the Operation U-Tree. Anyhow, yeah, as I was saying, I think it's just a matter of age and experience. I think AVB will be good in time. I mean, there's odd things about him that you can't question that I tend to look past because he's so dashing and handsome, and I look into his eyes and I get a bit gooey inside.
It's a touchline squat, isn't it?
It's not just that. It's his suits and his hair and, you know, his beard and how well he looks after himself. And then you've fucking got Tim Sherwood in his gilet that he's nicked from the club shop beforehand, and you kind of...
Do they look...
Yeah, they apparently, I didn't know they existed until Tim started fashioning them on the touchline every week.
He's
must have like a load in bulk that nobody's ever bought, so leaving one of the contractual things that he's dished upon him is he has to wear a different one every week just so we get through with him.
Do you ever see, I think Chris Ramsey puts them on every now and again. Have you ever seen Liz Ferdinand in a gilet? That sounds like a really long Twitter hashtag there, but Have you seen Les Ferdinand in a gilet? I don't know. Hashtag. Have you seen Les Ferdinand in a gilet? Perhaps when he was smashing up the Blue Peter Garden, Raj?
I think you haven't gone a week yet since Les Ferdinand being our assistant manager without mentioning the Blue Peter Garden.
I love it though. I actually love the fact that him and his mates just for a jolly jumped over the wall. Have you ever seen the Blue Peter interview after? Not interview, but the presenter the next week when they kind of talk to the kids, saying like, now, you might have seen in the papers some very naughty men came to the Blue Peter Garden. And I can just imagine, like, Les and... Was he with Ian Wright or someone like that? And they smashed it up. Arsene Wenger just happened to be at the Blue Peter Studios at the time.
All right, leave it out. He sleeps on the floor, never ever on the bed.
What?
Or was that Michael Jackson, wasn't it, that slept on the floor and everyone... I'm just getting my paedophiles mixed up. Alleged paedophiles mixed up, sorry.
Jesus juice and all that. But all right, let's steer it back towards the horrible southwest London.
We were talking about Les Ferdinand there, but did you guys catch the ridiculous quote he had in the one time Tottenham let him go speak to the press, and he hasn't since, when he called Claude Makélélé the worst thing to happen to English football?
Yeah. I've got to admit that. I mean, I actually thought it was like an Onion article or some sort of complete wind-up from Sabotage Times or something along those lines. But when I found out it was legitimate, I don't really kind of understand, because surely you've got like Sandro and Capu and probably another couple of players just sitting there thinking, oh, we're never going to play now. Like,
yeah, he managed to alienate half of our squad with the comments, yeah.
I just didn't understand it. I mean, you know, Makélélé was kind of like revolutionary well, he's got a position named after him. I mean, I don't know how that's necessarily a bad thing to make the Premier League divert away from 4-4-2, but, you know, I'll just leave it there.
I think essentially, like, in a very inarticulate fashion, he was trying to make the point that the Premier League has become much more defensive a game because of Claude Makélélé, because people saw how effective he was, yep, how brilliant he was. It slowed down the pace of the league. But just no. Like, just don't say that. Like, just... I don't know. It's a very bizarre thing to say.
To bring it back onto Chelsea, I mean, that away win at Manchester City in the league was just an advert for holding midfielders. I mean, Nemanja Matic was fantastic. And I mean, I think you've inadvertently done us a favour by buying him back off Benfica, because we don't have to play him twice now. So they'll be somewhat easier to play against.
I tell you what, he looks brilliant. He looks like he, the way he's just come into the Premier League again, slotted into that Chelsea team, he just looks absolutely incredible.
He's great on the ball as well. On it, like he yeah. just looks fantastic. He looks really good. I've got a lot of time for him.
And another player that I was trying to segue in was Willian. Willian. I don't know. I'm not trying to make a shit Black Eyed Peas joke there, by the way, which I've seen a lot of people do. But yeah, the nearly man of Tottenham Hotspur has become a very good player for you, which is quite annoying to see, to be honest. How are you rating him so far, guys?
I don't think I've actually seen a player at Chelsea, maybe since Essien in his pomp, who just does so much running, but purposeful running. It's not just sort of like Jordan Henderson or Milner just sprinting, you know, 15 miles a game up and down the flank. His movement, his awareness, his ability to find space. The fact that he's, you know, when we played him in the Champions League, I thought he was just this amazing attacking talent. But the way he can, you know, he can close players down. I think Mourinho actually kind of inadvertently made him man mark Touré when we played against him. Every time Touré touched the ball, Willian would almost sort of pincer him from behind, and Matic would kind of come from the front and they would pinch the ball for him. But he really has been just an incredible signing. I mean, he took a while to get going. Definitely needs to add goals and definitely needs to be a bit more greedy, I think, when he's around the area, because he's got a great strike on him. But
who did he say? He scored one against Norwich, wasn't it? An absolute clinker.
Yeah. But he's, you know, I think he's been absolutely, you know, superb, and particularly going into another season, you know, him and Hazard really kind of give you two, you know, William potentially isn't world-class, but he's exceptionally good in terms of, you know, Premier League quality, but he's a really good kind of foil for Hazard because he can do all that kind of running and he gives you a bit of defensive stability. He just needs to be a bit more greedy for me.
How about you, Fred? What do you make of the lad?
Yeah, you know, well, the weird thing is, I probably shouldn't admit this, but when we first signed him, I actually wasn't massively convinced initially. I didn't really see why we needed him, because obviously we had one matter at that point, and I didn't really see what he was going to add. I felt it was more just to get under your guys' skin a bit. And it just seemed, I don't know. I wasn't massively convinced, and I'll tell you why as well, because I was also a little bit sceptical of the fact that he's obviously done very well at, it was Shakhtar Donetsk, wasn't it, that he was playing at before? You know, Ukrainian league, whatever, you know, I wasn't massively convinced, but yeah, I had lots of conversations with my brother.
Soon to be Russian league. That's probably a bit distasteful, isn't it?
If you look where Donetsk is, actually, it's in a very pro-Russian part of Ukraine. But that's neither here nor there, really, is it? William, he's got a lovely face, great smile. He's very photogenic. I follow him on Instagram. He's a nice guy.
It's pretty much a Chelsea fan's dream, though. Scouted by Liverpool, flown over and given his medical by Tottenham, and then signed by Chelsea.
He hates Tottenham, you know. That's what the Matthew Harding stand thing about him. He hates Tottenham.
What is the chat, unless it's anti-Semitic or something? Because I know what you lot are like.
It's not anti-Semitic, but it's quite long. And probably it's probably factually accurate. I mean, William probably hates like Botafogo or, you know, Junior or Newell Boys or some random team in Brazil. Probably doesn't hate Tottenham. But
probably doesn't even know who we are, which is possibly more...
He probably doesn't even know that the song is about him, to be fair, because he only say the word Will I Am in it. It is that joke that you mentioned earlier. At the start of the song. And then the rest of it's just he hates Tottenham. Yeah, you know, I mean, and there's quite a long, convoluted verses.
That's quite articulate for Chelsea. He hates Tottenham. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, he does, you know. You can't argue with the truth there, really. Just to finish off what I was my long roundabout way of saying was actually at the start of the season I was backing Andre Schürrle to be more of to make more of an impact in the Premier League because
Schürrle can't be serious.
Hey.
Yeah, so I was backing on Schürrle. I thought he was more of a direct player. I thought he was. I just rate the German league probably a bit more than I do the Ukrainian league. Call me crazy, but I felt like he was going to make more of an impact as a kind of Premier League player, also as a Mourinho player. But actually, I've been proven completely wrong. You know, as we were saying, Willian's all over the place. He tracks back. He seems to have just been taken under Mourinho's wing. I think he does. He just works so hard. He's fantastic. He's been a revelation, to be honest with you. And my brother has been laughing in my face because I've been eating my words about him because I thought he was a waste of time when we first got him, if I'm completely honest.
Eating your words and an array of cured meats, no doubt, Freddie.
Always, always. I just got back from France where I've been eating lots of cured meats. So,
is it those horrible little Battender burgers that smell a bit like semen?
I ate so many of those.
What's cured meat?
It was about a 9-hour drive all
posh
the way.
Posh pepperamis, Raj.
Was it like ham?
No, it's think pepperami, but it's a little bit more coarse.
What do you get? What's it called in Morrison's? Is it called like smoked or unsmoked ham?
You'd probably call it chorizo.
Or chorizo. You get it from deli and that.
That kind of malarkey.
Yeah. I think Matheson's might do a kind of UK equivalent. in a weird curl shape.
Is it Matheson's Fridge Raiders, those horrible little like lovely constituted chicken's feet. Yeah, but Willian, Raj, you can't deny he's pretty much exactly what we would have needed, really.
We could have done with him. I don't think we would have signed the likes of... fucking obvious we could have done with him. We could have done with fucking all the other ones that we've had robbed off of over the years. I mean, there's that famous story of if you hadn't won the Champions League, we already had Eden Hazard on some sort of pre-contract or what have you, and... Other bollocks like that I can't be arsed dredging back up. But, we could have done with him, as I say. I don't think we'd have signed the likes of Christian Eriksen had we signed him, because I don't think we'd have pushed the budget there. I think economically, Christian Eriksen, given that he's a few years younger, a good few years younger, I think, a handful, and given that we signed him for a third of the price, he may in time be a better investment. He's more, in air quotes, a Levy signing, as you were, because we'll probably sell him on in a few years when we struggle to reach the ambitions of a player of his stature when he's, 23, 24, and we'll sell him on for a profit, as is our want. But, it comes and they go, really. I'm not going to miss a player that we don't have, although he's doing fantastically at Chelsea. I don't think he suits the current system that Sherwood's playing.
Which is what? Fucking run around?
You're not allowed to say that, Jack. We have to keep.
Oh, we're not allowed to say.
We have to keep a fucking solid front,
doesn't it?
A solid
Jesus
front.
Jesus Christ!
We're behind Tim and his Guna tattoo. We love the man and his fucking gilet.
Is that true? Is that true that he's proper Arsenal?
He's proper. Yeah. No, the fact that he's proper Arsenal, the tattoo's debatable. I've heard enough about it now to think that it's probably there. And like, I've seen the look in his eyes, like whenever he gets asked a question that's beyond "What's your name?" and he looks like he's watching his fucking house burn down in the distance. It's an absolute disgrace. But his entire family are all Arsenal season ticket holders, and it feels disgusting to admit it, but it's horrible. He even made like a small joke about it, didn't he? Before we played Arsenal, they're like, "Oh, do you want Arsenal to win this game? Because it might do better for you." And he had a bit of a cheeky wink and a nod to one of the Sunday papers and was like, choice for me.
The only joke I thought he made before the Arsenal game was naming Nabil Bentaleb in the starting lineup, but there you go. Maybe we shouldn't carry on this one.
You're not particularly happy with Sherwood, the pair of you. is he your Benitez for a comparative?
No, because Rafael Benitez has a fucking Champions League winner's medal. I don't know what Tim Sherwood's done beforehand other than wash our youth players' boots. He's a ridiculous comparison. I'd take Rafael Benitez now over Tim Sherwood. We've got a crackpot team of Tim Sherwood and fucking Les Ferdinand. It's disgrace. He's never done anything.
But you know how it is, Joe. Voicing an opinion about football. You're regularly called a disgrace for saying that you quite like David Luiz, aren't you?
Yeah. I seem to get a lot of stick from, from sort of the regular people who just tend to give you stick for, if you said the sky's blue, it's black, and these people who just, whatever reason, want to have a contentious opinion with you. I make a thing of saying, you know, I'm not really one to dig out players, but, you know, some of the stick that Luiz gets from mistakes that a lot of people make during games. I mean, we're talking about getting beaten on like a perfect cross by a striker, which probably most centre-backs in the Premier League would get beaten on. And in fact, Terry did get beat. I think it was in the, game probably 2 weeks later on, exact time, exact same cross, exact same trajectory. Player ran across him, scored a goal, but, you know, obviously absolutely no mention of it. Not something that you know, you necessarily bring up with people, but it's for me, it gets a little bit dull at times. I'm sure you've got players that you particularly like, but, you know, whether in terms of Luiz, my main thing really with him is, I think on an international level and probably outside the Premier League, he's going to be an absolutely fantastic centre-back. But in the Premier League, I think he's probably more suited to a central midfield role. Again, I get a lot of stick for saying central midfield and not holding midfield. I don't think he's got the discipline to play there. But, you know, when you pair him with someone like Matic, I mean, you can see the effect he had in the City game, the Liverpool game at home when we absolutely crushed them. You know, I think he does need to be groomed into more of a box-to-box player. And I think really, you know, a lot of the fans are talking about going and spending, you know, 20, 30 million on Pogba or, you know, someone of that kind of calibre of player who is genuinely box-to-box, can do everything. But, you know, we might have a £30 million midfielder who is currently in the squad and has played very well there this season. It might just be worth persisting with him full-time there.
But, so, surely, if you're spending ridiculous money on that kind of box-to-box player and you're talking about Juventus, I'd go for Vidal over Pogba any day.
He's the obvious quality. I mean, there was a stat something recently that he leads Europe in tackles, interceptions, completion of passes in every third, or, you know, some ridiculous stat about him being essentially everywhere on the pitch. And, you know, they really missed him when they played Milan. Although they did win 2-0, they weren't their kind of usual dominant self at the weekend. You know, if we're looking at someone along those lines, which is, you know, a lot of the talk at Chelsea has been that's the kind of player that the club are after. You know, we paid 20-something million pounds for Luiz. You know, he's...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As I was saying, I think he's a very good international centre-back, particularly when he plays next to Thiago Silva. But, you know, for me, and I think a lot of the stick that people send my way is, you know, he's a very good footballer. You know, he makes mistakes, but there's a lot to say for his drive and passion. He just, you know, he'll throw himself into tackles. He bullies people. He's very good on the ball. He's aggressive when he's got the ball. You know, he'll just constantly try, you know, forward passes. You know, very rarely do you see him play a simple pass. And really, you know, I'm going a bit of a rant about him here, but I would, you know, I genuinely would like to see him play there a lot more often, particularly towards the end of the season.
Go on, mate, go for it.
I was going to say, with Luiz, you'll recoup that money, because today we had the news that Carlos Puyol's going to be leaving Barcelona, and they're already short enough at the back as it is, and you can imagine him doing very well in La Liga and playing that
sort of... He'd be phenomenal out there, yeah. He would be, you know, if you think in terms of... You know, the guy who plays the centre-back for the moment is probably Mascherano and maybe a Piqué or someone like that. But, you know, Luiz in a league where he's not entirely, you know, depended on to defend, you know, he could bring the ball at the back as well as anyone in world football. The only problem I think we've got is that Mourinho really does seem to like him recently. You know, you can see the reaction, particularly after the Liverpool game where he interrupted the kind of interview, come up and really made a big sort of show to the cameras that he was really pleased with him. And I think really... If we're trying to build a squad that can you know, compete seriously next season in Europe, you need to have a player who can, you know, comfortably fit in, particularly in European football. He fits in well at the back and equally in midfield. So I think we'd be mad to sell him.
A question I'd like to chat to you lads actually is: would you take Jan Vertonghen? Do you reckon he's a decent player?
I'd take him tomorrow. Yeah, I think he's for me, in terms of like Premier League defender, he's kind of like a kind of modern Terry. It's probably a horrible thing for you guys to hear, but no, Terry is. I mean, it's in terms of his like style of defending, he's kind of more modern in terms of Terry. But he reads the game really well. He's really aggressive, you know, comfortable in the air. He can clean people out when you need to. He's got a bit of that sort of edge about him, which I like about centre backs. You know, all this sort of modern thing about having ball-playing centre-backs, you need someone in your back four who, if someone comes through and they can give them a dig and get up and they can go face-to-face with people and intimidate people a little bit. And I think Vertonghen does that quite well. I think he is left-footed, isn't he? You know, you could play him on the left with, you know, Luiz or whoever on the right. But, I mean, you know, we've signed that Zuma kid from Saint-Étienne, so... You know, it's something that I think he would probably get in the team, Vertonghen, definitely next season. But, you know, we've obviously got to sign that beastly kid from France. So, yeah.
Well, I'm getting conscious of time, so I've got a couple more things I want to talk about. First of all, is the game that's coming up. We'll start from the Spurs perspective here, Raj. I'm not holding much hope, mate, to be honest about this one. We've seen kind of every time we've played one of the big teams, as it were, that Sherwood's naivety, I would say, has been shown up. Can you see much different here against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge?
I reckon a point's the best thing we can do. I reckon we've got about as much a point as me sending you a Snapchat in an hour of me being balls deep in Beyonce of getting 3 points at Stamford Bridge. to be quite frank, I've got no hope.
That was Frank. That was Frank.
What, Frank Lampard?
No, well, no, not him.
No, but no, I haven't got a hope in hell that we're going to get anything from there. As I say, a point's probably the best we're going to do.
You lads, I mean, would you say that kind of Tottenham post-Bale, Modric, Van der Vaart, Ledley King... Because we actually had those players a couple of years ago.
This is wholly removed from the very obvious rivalry and what I'll be thinking on Saturday, but it is fairly sort of on the cusp of this phenomenal team. I mean, you know, Modric has just gone on to be this completely dominant midfielder. He was at Tottenham, to be fair, but I mean, he's gone on to this sort of another level almost at Real Madrid.
Oh, completely. Yeah, he's
Van der Vaart, Bale, you know, I mean, you had the makings of a good back four. You brought in some sort of good, you know, obviously some good players. And to see that go from that potential team to a kind of team of very good players, but you were very, you know, you were on the cusp of being a very special team. It must just be completely gutting. And, you know, in terms of sort of London football, I would much rather, you know, be battling out with you than Arsenal purely because their fans are complete idiots. But, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things really, which must be, you know, particularly this season when, you know, you've had a lot of tight games. I know Tottenham are probably one of the only teams really in England that have a kind of style of football about the club that you know, you're expected to play attacking football. It just must be a little bit disheartening that you've gone from this phenomenal team to a team that, is winning games, but not necessarily playing particularly well or particularly attacking, or you've kind of lost all your flair, aren't you?
Yeah, well, it's something we've spoken about at length on the pod. It feels like there's just a complete malaise over this season. That there's many that just want to get this season over and done with because it's, you know, whatever happened under AVB, it was a very boring start to the season. Then we were kind of promised that, you know, it might not be as organised, it might not be as... you know, as airtight as it was with AVB, if you discount shipping like 11 goals to City and Liverpool under Sherwood, at least we're going to go for it. We're going to get a bit of swagger. We're going to get a bit of kind of caution to the wind. But, you know, barring the first couple of games we had under Sherwood, that's completely disappeared as well. That we just seem to be going through each game in a very monotonous fashion, that there's no real invention or spark or understanding between our players. And it just feels like we've lost a hell of a lot of our identity, most of all. That once when we had players like Bell, and we had like Ledley King in particular, always there. We had Sandro, who has been obviously injured out for most of the season now. Players like that, these big personalities, and it's all fallen onto the shoulders of Michael Dawson now, who kind of strikes me, love him as I do, strikes me as the kind of bloke that would
you know, probably struggles to tie his own shoelaces, let alone marshal a defence and be a leader to the whole team as well. We've got a kind of a man that's not really that inspiring a leader. We've got a lot of off pitch stuff. We've got StubHub going on, where all of our fans are kind of essentially ripping one another off. You know, we're facing these kind of like, you know, the abandonment from the club on the Y word issue, which, you know, we won't go into too much. But it's just a lot of things. Yeah, they took the kind of the drum away from the supporters. They can't take any flags into the stadium. Like, just all these silly little things that have kind of built up that it's just left so many people within the ground just like thinking, what who is this team now? Who are they? We've got all these new players in that haven't gelled. We've got this weird manager, and it is like you say, it's just a bit of a black hole. And you try to be positive about it, you do, and you want to see us still do well. I'd love to see us still have a real go at the Europa League. Although even that is a point of contention. You have some fans who say, "Oh, we should just throw it. We should just throw it and concentrate on finishing in the top four." But whatever.
Where's the final for that this year?
I don't know, actually. Do you know, Raj?
No.
There we go, we're shit fans.
Why would we look towards the final? I mean, that's far too positive for Tottenham fans at this moment in time. I mean,
so we can book our tickets, mate.
Yeah, to be slightly more positive on the whole thing, I think with the current squad, we've got a genesis of a germ of something slightly positive there. I mean, it's not quite Modric and Van der Vaart as the players that they were, but we've sort of got similar sort of players a few years behind. I mean,
don't say Bentaleb.
Not Bentaleb.
I've got no idea who he is, but I actually love Bentaleb.
We've got Eriksen and Holtby, and, you know, Hugo Lloris is one of the best keepers in the league, and Sandro, as he says, is fantastic. We've not seen enough of Eric Lamela to write him off, and he's, you know, he's 22 years old. I think it might even be today's birthday, so he's still a kid. All up and down the squad, we've got Vertonghen's there, and Kirakesh is only 24, and Kyle Walker's been much better this season. We definitely need a new left back, because one of them's a fucking idiot on loan at QPR, and the other one's Danny Rose that can't stay fit whatsoever. And then you've got Kyle Norton that on occasion doesn't look like he's ever seen a fucking football before. So it's, you know, there's areas that need improving for definite. They're probably the same areas that needed improving under the last squad, in all honesty. We've probably replaced just about as well as we could the players that we've lost. And most of those we couldn't avoid. I mean, Ledley King, his knees were shot well before he retired. Rafael van der Vaart's gone to Germany, started beating his wife, and he's got fat and he's in the relegation zone at the moment. And, you know, Modric and Bale at Madrid are essentially
Galacticos.
Yeah, I mean, when they start coming knocking, I mean, you don't turn them down. A club like Tottenham, I mean, we've got this special arrangement apparently with them, which just feels like they've got, you know, the keys to our belt buckle, so they can pull our pants down whenever they feel the fucking want to. So it's, I mean, at the same time, it feels shit at the minute because we're not doing as well. It can quite easily go better should we, you know, make the necessary changes in the summer and what have you, and slowly start to build an identity back within the squad, because I think all the jokes we make about Sherwood, I think with him being so inexperienced, that's the one thing he misses the most, is having his own coaching identity, because you can see week on week that he's essentially learning the craft and the job for himself, because he's never done it before to any sort of level. You're probably seeing a similar sort of thing with Di Matteo, even though his experience when he took the job at Chelsea was much better than Sherwood's was, because he's never managed top flight before, never mind a first team in any sort of capacity. So it's a strange season. I mean, we'll probably end it in a downward spiral as we usually do. And the summer will end up being one of those summers, and next year will always end up being the next year. So it's, you know, it's a similar vicious circle for Tottenham that, you know,
at least Arsenal are on their way down as well. We can all celebrate that.
Who are you guys looking at in the summer for management? Are you looking at
Van Gaal? It's Van Gaal, pretty much. A lot of people say it's actually a done deal as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll see. But how are you guys going to, like, we'll take it on to Chelsea. How are you guys going to line up? You got any injuries at the moment?
Fred, do you want to take that?
Shit, man, over here.
No, that was the answer, Jack, apart from the obvious one.
Is Fred still... Fred, are you there, mate?
I'm here.
Oh, sorry, just the connection sort of dropped off a bit there, mate. Have you got any injuries out there, Joe?
I don't think so, no. And I think even Van Hinkle, sort of a guy I was had quite high hopes of this season, is back to training now, which is a good thing, really, for him, because he had quite a nasty injury. So I think we're pretty much there or thereabouts. Though obviously we're recording this before the international break, so I'm hoping that no one takes a fancy to Eden Hadder's knees and takes him out during the Belgium game. But yeah, I think hopefully we're looking full strength for Saturday.
How are you going to line up? Sorry, Fred, mate. What were you saying?
No, I was just saying. I think Van Hinkle had his first training session today, back from like first full training session today, and he was playing off really excited about the start of the season. So it's good to see him coming back.
It's good to see, like, rivalry and everything aside, you don't want to see, like, a young player that's with a massive amount of ability like that kind of suffer any kind of career-ending injuries. And it did look a bit dicey for a while, didn't it? It was a horrible one. How do you guys see yourselves lining up to face us?
Go, Fred.
I think so. One thing that Mourinho has to be doing very much is actually rotating an awful lot. I'd like to see Andre Silva start, because I think, you know, the back of getting a hat-trick against Fulham, I'd just like to see him start. But then I like Andre Silva. I've got a soft spot for him. So I wouldn't be surprised if Mourinho didn't start. We'll see.
I would imagine the team is probably going to be Cech in goal, Ivanovic at right back, probably Cahill and Terry at the back, Aspi at left back. I think he'll probably go, because you've got some quite big players in midfield, I think he'll go Luiz and Matic in midfield. And I think, Fred's right, I think he might reward Schürrle with a start. So I'd go Schürrle, Hazard and Willian behind maybe Torres, though he does seem to favour Eto at home. So, I mean, it kind of, I suppose, really depends on how he's feeling with the strikers, but... It's a pretty decent team and quite a few of those guys are in form at the moment, so I'm quite looking forward to it.
Got any predictions on the score at all?
I never do score predictions, but I'm hoping for a 1-0. I'll take 1-0 to the end of the season. But it's going to be interesting. I think if Sherwood plays, I don't know if he's been playing the 4-4-2 that recently, but we've really sort of dominated any people that have come and tried to play two in the middle against us. Liverpool was a very good case in point when they came to us and tried to play two in midfield for the first half. We probably played as well as we had done that season, kind of up until that point. So I'd be very interested to see really what Sherwood's doing in terms of that. If he plays two in midfield, we could have a good game and maybe win by two. If he matches in midfield, it would be quite interesting. As I'm saying, I'll take a 1-0 here.
How about you, Fred, mate?
I don't think you guys are going to score at the Bridge. On our current form, and I think because Mourinho, I think, has got the edge. I reckon we'll just get the one and then sit on it, to be honest with you. That seems to be Mourinho's style at the moment, so I think that's the way it will go. Maybe we'll get a second, but I just can't see us conceding at the Bridge. I may well be completely wrong, but you know, that's football, isn't it?
What about you, Raji boy?
What a score prediction?
Yeah.
2-3 to Chelsea. If we were score, it'll most likely be through Adebayor. I can't predict the team we'll play because it changes week upon week. I mean, it depends if Christian Eriksen's fit, because I think the Danish FA have come out and said that they're not going to be risking him against England tomorrow night, so that might be playing into our hands a bit more, but... As Joe alluded to, it depends who we get back from the international break fit and who's crocked and whatnot, and the team he decides to play in and things like that. I mean, as I said before, I'm not at all hopeful for this one. Not the fact that it's Chelsea, but it's more Mourinho. I don't think Mourinho's going to be letting himself slip to a manager that's as so inexperienced as Sherwood.
Well, there we go. I'm going to be honest, I'm going to have to say 2-0 Chelsea, I think. Sorry.
Well, we've got a good record. Every time that you predict us to lose, we manage to actually do something better. So, I mean, there's always that precedent to cling on to.
No. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just, to end the show, lads, I'm going to just ask just a few questions about football in general. And just say limit the answers to about 30 seconds in total. Okay. So I'll start with you, Joe. Is there a downside, if any, to safe standing?
Yeah. I've got quite a few small cousins who I take to football. Potentially, they might not be able to see it, but you know, it's too big to answer in 30 seconds. Unfortunately, and there are downsides, but I think there are absolutely massive positives. And for me, the positives outweigh the negatives.
Raj, are Chelsea going to win the Premier League?
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, there you go. One word answer. How's that?
Fred, who's been the best player in the league this year?
I think Luis Suarez. I feel sick saying that. I think Luis Suarez. I think he's been incredible.
I'll go back to Joe. Do you think Tim Sherwood was a good appointment for Tottenham, or should we have kept AVB?
I think you'd probably be better off with AVB. I don't know if long term if it would have worked out, but I think you probably would be definitely playing better than with Sherwood now. Maybe it would have clicked. I don't know, but I would have kept him around.
We've got a few questions from the fans as well that we'll throw at you afterwards.
Perfect.
Jack, you ready?
Go for it, mate. None are particularly that constructive from what I've had a look through.
None whatsoever, but that's half the reason I want to ask you them.
There's one that I found that was quite decent, which was, is it true that Chelsea buns are actually just filled with spiders with their legs pulled off as opposed to currants? That's from @all_Spurs.
It's completely true. It's been a massive conspiracy for the past 60 years, and I'm quite disappointed that it's now been uncovered.
I'll tell you what, we've got one from my lady friend's cousin, who is actually a Chelsea fan, who is @DaffyKyle, that says, "Dear Chelsea fans, what does it feel like being the only team in London to win a European Cup?"
It's great. It's really, really good. Yeah. Thanks for asking that question.
Fred wasn't too happy about it. He already said it at the start of the season. So, at the start of the show.
Huge disappointment. all I was thinking was that we didn't make a profit that season. I was so disappointed.
I'll tell you, here's a sort of decent one. @PhilWalker8 asks, do you actually remember the time before you were a really successful team? He just calls it the time before.
I do. I remember having a sticker for Glenn Hoddle as I think he was even player manager.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, and I also remember playing, I think it was FIFA 96, and we had Mark Steen up front.
Steen up on the left.
But that's literally as far, that's where my memory starts, really. I remember us playing players like, Ambrosetti. I remember Lambord. I remember playing some absolute donkeys.
Yeah, that's the early 2000 team. My memory probably stretches back to about 94. But I mean, we were kind of how we are now. We had this knack of beating United quite regularly, but then we would get smashed by Coventry or Bradford or someone completely rubbish, which is sort of happening this season where we're quite comfortable in big games, but we kind of lose to the Stokes as well. So there is some sort of symmetry between that kind of early, quite mediocre Chelsea team with the likes of Furlong up front, who is possibly still the worst player I've ever seen play for Chelsea. And obviously Torres. So, you know, it's quite weird how things pan out.
Here we go. Here's a good one from Anthony Ashton, who is @AnthonyAshton1. He says, how are you finding evolution?
The evolution of Chelsea or just evolution in general?
I think he might be suggesting that Chelsea fans are
pond life.
Yeah, there you go.
Ah, okay, yeah. Being someone who is...
opposable thumbs and things.
Okay. I'll be honest, I never really get the Chad thing. I really, really don't. I mean, it'd be great if someone actually wanted, they'll probably come and give me some abuse. If they could actually explain it using proper sentences. And also if they can kind of juxtapose Tottenham and the sort of, you know, kind of West London that Chelsea's in, that would also be quite nice. So I think that would give me some colour on the situation.
I'll run through some of the less constructive ones if you want, Jack, if you're trying to be democratic.
Let's go.
I just don't really see what we're going to get from some of them, to be honest, mate.
I'll get a small sense of satisfaction after the European Cup question, to be quite
go
honest.
On, yeah, go on then, go on then.
What do you intend to do with your old Man United shirts?
Really?
Yep, that's one of the ones we've got in. These aren't off the top of my head, I promise.
Who was that from?
Roger sat there and thought, I'm going to ask some really ridiculous questions.
I've been planning these for a week, actually. But no, that's from at Russell French.
I've got a Wanmata 8 United shirt, if that comforts him. So, yeah.
Do you really?
No, I don't know. I'm quite happy you were really putting about the sarcasm there. What would I do in my Man United shirt? Absolutely no idea. Born and bred, unfortunately.
Johnny Walzak says, how do you live with yourself?
Quite well, actually, yeah.
Yeah, pretty nicely, actually, in West London.
it's quite a nice
part of the world. I don't know if you've been...
I wouldn't recommend writing there, but yeah, you might get a few kids from Clapham might get a bit leery, so you never know. But
Ledney King says, how afraid are you of playing against Norton and Friars?
I don't know if Friars is, so I'm going to be very afraid.
Ezekiel Friars is this lad that he must be about 19, 20 now, that we went through this whole thing where we wanted to buy him from Man United, but Fergie didn't want to sell him directly to us. So Daniel Levy, supposedly, allegedly, because, you know, this is one of the ones where he probably will try and sue us if we say this, apparently helped fund, I can't remember which Belgian side it was, he helped fund a Belgian side buy him for half a season. And then the following January, once he'd gone from Man United to Belgium, we then subsidised the money that the Belgian team played and then bought him from there. So he went all around the houses for this lad to, you know, go past Fergie. And he's not looking the brightest of prospects at the minute, even though he's too young. I mean, it's Tottenham luck. It's Tottenham luck.
He just looks like he's not really a footballer, doesn't he?
He doesn't... I know it sounds really harsh, but he doesn't look like he moves like a normal person. Just his entire body moves unnaturally. It's really strange.
Did United sell him to the team in Belgium and they kind of, because no one really knew about it, did they just swap him with one of their other academy players and just give you this is Ezekiel Fryer's Jedi mind sort of style and just, you know, this is the player you want?
Are we signing from, who is it? Anderlecht?
No, it wasn't Anderlecht. Let me...
Brian Antwerp.
Yeah, it may have been them. But yeah, it was... really odd that we went around the house because it wasn't even like it was well hidden. I mean, everyone knew what they were doing. Standard Liège that he went to, played 7 times for Standard Liège before we bought him. I think Man United even complained afterwards because it was so obvious, because we just sort of sidetracked any sort of compensation that we had to pay them and just sort of levelled it out with this Belgian side. Let me find some of the rest of you. That one's boring. This is from Tim Grigg, who says, what is your favourite ever Terry family controversy or wrongdoing?
There's quite a few to choose from, actually. What's my favourite one?
Well, I was in Esher High Street when he parked his car in a disabled bay. So that's
disgrace. Awful. Awful.
The big Bentley. Jack, you remember Esher High Street, don't you?
I do, mate. I do. It was naughty ends around there. We can't really say much more than that, can we?
Well, the girl from our school who did a kiss and tell with him.
That's true, yeah.
That was the early days, though. That was when he was about 19. scene then, I think.
If you guys ever remember the story, there was a girl who, she did the kiss and tell to the papers, and her actual quote, which I'm sure her father was proud of, I went to the England team hotel, he shagged me, and then went to join the rest of the team, and I ordered a pizza and watched Only Fools and Horses.
You sound like you went to a lovely store.
At least Terry likes classy birds. I mean, you can't really deny anyone who likes Only Fools and Horses is class. So, you know, you can't knock him.
That's true. We won't say her name for legal and social reasons, but Did you pulled her as well, didn't you, Fred? Did you stir Terry's custard?
This has got brilliant. No.
I think Freddie stirred JT's custard.
No way.
John Terry had your sloppy seconds.
No, I was just about to tell another story there, but I thought I probably won't tell that one. No, he hasn't.
Go on, tell the story.
Well, I was going to say one of your ex-players has. Jack?
Really? Who? What?
I can't.
Just say it. We're not going to... Nobody legally listens to this. We'll just say allegedly. Do it.
Yeah. Mr. Jermaine Jenas has followed in Freddie's footsteps.
Really?
It was just a peck on the lip, so it was nothing more.
All right.
Oh, look at him, little
being all coy. But it was actually Freddie. God, I think you should tell a story of your unrequited love. Essentially, Fred, he identified a young lady that he liked at university. I said young lady twice in 2 weeks now, Raj. I'm showing my age.
It makes you sound like a proper 40-year-old man.
Makes me sound like I'm on a Werther's original advert. But Fred, the object of his affection was kind of, he was working on this girl, and he would always kind of give us reports back, as you do when you're kind of 18, 19, be like, lads, you know, this happened, or we had a chat about this, and I think it's going really well, and I think something's going to happen here.
Do I need to put like strings on this when I edit it? Do I need to put like soft strings in the background?
No, because it just built to this point when he was like, I'm pretty sure soon, like in the next couple of weeks or so, we're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend, and that's
boyfriend
it.
Boyfriend and girlfriend.
And then. And then the
I'm
next
sorry
report...
to laugh at you, Freddie, if this still like it still resonates.
This is all false. None of this actually happened.
This did all happen. And then the next report we got back from him was, well, she's going out with someone. We were like, oh, that's a bit of a bolt out of the blue. And he's like, yeah, just a small matter of it being a Premier League footballer who, on the first time he came around, brought like a 50-inch flat screen television. Just like, oh, I've got a few of these. Do you want it?
No, he didn't. He didn't actually bring it around. He said that he. What did he say? He offered it to her because he was moving. He was moving house, I think. And she said, "Nah. Do you know what? We've already got a TV in our house. We don't need it." And all of us were like, "What? It's a TV. Come on, you know." Anyway,
did you?
It was a simpler time then. It was a simpler time.
Did you give him a firm handshake when you met him, Fred? Were you like, "Did you show me? I'm boss."
I met him once, and I remember just being in awe of how short he was. Like, he's not actually that short, but I always thought he was really tall and gangly and kind of. And I think that was probably. I mean, you know, I clearly made a big impression on him. I just stood there amazed that he wasn't as tall as I thought he was.
Discarded in between his scripts.
It's going down that route a bit, isn't it? I met him once. I don't even think we exchanged any words.
Did you have like a dartboard at home with his face on?
No. I just watched him play football.
I mean, he must have had a voodoo doll. It'd probably explain why he's had so many knee injuries and part of his career. It's probably all down to Fred's unrequited love and voodoo.
Did I not mention? I kicked him in the knee. I kicked him in the knee a couple of times when he wasn't looking.
Yeah. Full on dropkick.
I feel like I've humiliated myself quite enough now, actually.
And you've done it on the podcast as well, which is fantastic.
I wish I'd never mentioned this. Oh, no.
Well, there we go. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, lads. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's all right. I mean, it's...
That's what she said to Jermaine Jenas.
Hey! It's what I would call one of our smelly fixtures. But, you know, I love it nonetheless. I love playing your horrible lot. I love playing the red lot. So it's a bit of a highlight, isn't it? Even if we do end up usually getting smashed. But yeah, I'll be sure to rub it in your faces, both if we actually do manage to get a result on the weekend. But yeah, thank you for joining us, lads.
That's okay.
Yes.
Bye.
Right, so I think we can disinfect our clothes after this one, after having that horrible lot on the show. Smug bastards! You can't help but imagine. Oh God! You know, Raj, like they're going to win the league. They've won the Champions League. You know, should we be starting to get tempted by money? Have the goalposts, and this isn't my opinion, but I'm just saying genuinely, have the goalposts moved, mate? Has the definition of what it is to be a normal football team, is that getting rewritten now? Like, as some might have said, we were, when the Premier League era started, that Tottenham were one of the big five, one of the teams that brought about the start of the Premier League. Many people probably looked at us with quite a lot of scorn, as they do at City, Chelsea, PSG, Monaco, so on and so forth. If we want to keep up, do we have to just bite the bullet and sell on and become that soulless, insipid, horrible entity that they are?
I wouldn't say so, no. I mean, I think the thing that we always point to is the fact that we need to maximise our match day profit and commercial value, and that'll come through, more than anything, the stadium. So once that's built and we have that sort of financial backing on a weekly basis, we'll be able to rise our wages so that we can price our players more competitively and pay them as much. I mean, short of having one of these morally corrupt type of oil barons that have gained their wealth through questionable means. I mean, Roman Abramovich, the deals he made with the Russian government in order to have that sort of, the deals he had into oil is, you know, far from legal in many people's eyes. And the fact that he owns the club and runs it in the manner he does, and the success they've had, you know, doesn't sit comfortably with me. As I've made plainly obvious before, especially with, you know, Manchester City. And I mean, Paris Saint-Germain and Monaco are no better. I mean, clubs such as, I know it pains you to say it, but Arsenal have done it in a much more appropriate manner. They're still shit, which is why, you know, it's probably, in a purely footballing sense, better to just be bought out by somebody of that nature than try and do it in any sort of sustainable manner. It's just a long old road. You have to kind of, there's going to be more of these transition periods, these more, you know, these testing seasons, and there will be ones where we're flourished with trophies and wins and things. I mean, I'd rather be the size of club and the type of run club we are at the moment and win the odd trophy through the right means by what we define them, and be happy with what we've achieved. I mean, the odd FA Cup, the odd Carling Cup, maybe even stretch yourselves to Europa League, the odd run in the Champions League. If that's what the glass ceiling is for a club that runs themselves financially responsibly and doesn't make you feel ill when you look at the you know, the type of money that they pay for players and the amount that they get a week. And
do you know what, mate? You're saying this, and I'm of the same opinion as you. But what I don't understand is, like, you know, we've asked for questions from, you know, the listeners tonight as to what they would ask the Chelsea fans, and it's all been, you know, kind of, what do you know? How do you sleep at night? And it is funny to kind of rib them a bit like that, and to say, you know, what's it like to support a kind of soulless team and this and that. But then you've got a lot of Spurs fans who, at the same time, and I'm sure some of the people that have actually asked the questions tonight, I can't name anyone in particular, but people that will say, we should fuck off the Europa League to get top four. You know, AVB wasn't doing the job. We weren't pushing for top four.
We are to get top four this season, that doesn't mean we'll get it next season. All it means is we'll be in the Champions League this year. It's not a sustainable thing at the moment.
Like, it's not a sustainable thing, and it's like, it isn't the type of thing that, you know, if we do sustain getting into the top four, the next level is, as Arsenal are seeing, is we have to start winning the league, or at least winning a trophy, as well as finishing in the top four. And as you've alluded to there, Arsenal are doing a very good job without the resources of a team like City or Chelsea, but that still isn't good enough for their fans. So I think it really is getting to that time where the fans need to decide what is it that they actually want, because success, prolonged and sustained and top level success, in my opinion, is not going to come any longer with teams like Chelsea and City operating in the way in which they do. Thus, if you want that, then you can't be against and you can't look down on teams like City and Chelsea for doing what they're doing. If you are happy to not be that type of team, which I am and which you are, as well as you say from that, then you need to start looking at things like the Europa League. You need to start looking at things like the League Cup and the FA Cup and saying that is achievable and that is something of fantastic merit and we should be trying to win those things and not pouring scorn upon it. Where do you stand
on the whole oligarch issue? Would you not accept one with open arms, but would you be able to live with the, you know, appreciate the club and support the club in the same capacity you do currently?
No, not in the same capacity. I'm being genuine honest about that. I'm not going to say, oh, no, I'd be disgusted and I could never, ever celebrate a Tottenham win again. If we got bought out by an oligarch and won the Champions League 2 years later, of course I'd be happy to see us win the Champions League, because I would kind of, well, not kind of, I would be thinking, well, you know, this is a Champions League that's also populated by teams like City, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, PSG, Monaco, teams that have been financially doped for years. So to win that, it is a level playing field. But at the same time, would I still have that same level of, considering our Champions League run a few years ago, when, yeah, we didn't win it and we got absolutely dicked by Real Madrid, but beating teams like AC Milan, Bale's hat-trick in Milan against Inter and his subsequent demolition of them at home, it wouldn't feel the same. That, to me, felt pure. That felt like, this is Tottenham. We are the small team. We're the minnows. We're the team that when you see these kind of, you know, chip shop owners and whatever beating a big team in the FA Cup and everyone is behind them and everyone thinks that's brilliant. That's what we were when we were in the Champions League. And I like being that. I like being that team of whatever, if it means we're also Rans, if it means that we don't stand any real chance of doing it. I like the fact that we're there and we're mixing it with big teams like that. And we're doing it off of the back of playing, you know, decent football and having a team that's well managed, and that is something I have to give Harry for that run, that he managed the team well in that run, in that Champions League season at least, and really pepped up the spirits. And again, the fact that a lot of the players we bought, we nurtured. You know, Modric, yeah, he cost us a lot of money. Bale cost us a lot of money, not huge money, but they cost us money. But they were rough diamonds, and they were products that we refined and we built into very exceptional footballers. Very exceptional, didn't really belong together, but into exceptional footballers. And I was proud of that team. And I think that's more what I want. I'm not desperately clamoring for us to win the title or to win the Champions League, as much as I'd love it. For me, it's more just knowing that we've given it our best shot. And I think that is primarily what's getting me down about this season. I know I sounded a bit negative and I was probably a bit over the top with that with the Chelsea lads, but I think what's gotten me down and got me down about the Cardiff performance and quite a few performances this season is that I genuinely get that feeling that not all of our players are really up for it, that there isn't that same fight there. And that's kind of why I think I can excuse players like Dawson when he does fuck up every now and again, because he does seem like a player that whatever, he's always got that fight and he always gives a shit. And I think that's more so just in my opinion as a football fan, and what I want from my team is a team that will just uphold the proud traditions of our club and will go forwards and will just fight for the shirt and chase every ball and play every game like it's their last. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old romantic, but that's what I want. But to again cut my rant short, would I stop supporting Spurs if we got bought out by an oligarch? Probably not. Depends again on their history. If it's an oligarch with maybe, like, you know, horrendous human rights issues littered in his past or something like that, then yes, that's something I'd have to question. But if it's someone that's done things questionably in a business sense, then, you know, I probably have to swallow it and see it as football's changed as opposed to my team has changed. But that same romanticism, that same love, that same kind of spark would be lost. Yes. Christ, it took me about 10 minutes to answer that, mate. Sorry.
It's all right. I mean, I think you pretty much covered everything I've ever said about the matter in a roundabout way. I mean, I would never feel as comfortable supporting Tottenham in the same capacity that I do now if we were to go down the same road. I mean, as vociferously as I've said negative things about Chelsea and Manchester City in the past and the way in which they're run, for me to then turn my back on it and say, you know, it's Tottenham now, it's a different matter, we're on the same playing field, it'd just feel wrong inside. And I don't think I'd ever... It's one of those strange things. I don't think I'd ever be able to completely disconnect myself from the club because I've spent so many years, so much emotional investment, monetary investment in our club and what have you, so many years just supporting them as best as I can and to the extent that I can. I mean, it breaks my heart that I'm not in a financial position to go and watch every single game home and away and across Europe. I mean, I think them both were in a similar position that if we did have the disposable finances to be able to do that sort of thing, as some fans are luckily able to, we would. But, you know, it comes down to real life and sometimes you just can't. But I don't think I'd have the want or the desire to follow them in that sort of manner. If we were to follow the same route as some of those, I mean, I think I'd... I mean, it's almost as if, like, you know, if you ever break up with someone, you kind of keep half an eye on them on their Facebook, and Tottenham would still be the first team I look for the score of, and I'd still be happy when they won something. I'd still probably watch them on TV, but I don't think I'd ever be pushed
exactly
to go and see them live. It would almost be slightly voyeuristic, the experience I have of it. I don't think I'd be... I remember, like, hugging my dad when we won the Carling Cup the last time and crying slightly and being that happy with what we'd done. And I don't think I'd ever be able to... That level of joy would never be untapped. I mean, I've said that line previously about the photo of Steve Perryman I've got signed of him lifting the FA Cup and what that represents for me and what that represents for Tottenham and the tradition that we hold and the thing that we have. And we may be called old romantics and we may be knocked down for that, but it doesn't make it wrong. It's just a different perception of a way in which a sport can be gone. And the fact that we have to have lengthy discussions about the business side of a sport and not just concentrate what's happening on the field and allow ourselves to be encapsulated by the players that play the game and slightly dabble in the tactics and statistics, and we have to have this sort of moral question about the sport, makes you think about the wider context of the beast in which we follow, because maybe it's something that's going to all consume everything at some point. Maybe there's going to be some point where it's, you know, it's going to become some NFL type of thing where it's a franchise across everywhere and Tottenham aren't going to be in Tottenham anymore. And it's run by the money men, the TV companies and the sponsorships, which in all honesty, that's probably where we're going to find ourselves in the not too distant future, which is more than disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, mate. But it, you know, it's something that requires a hell of a lot of discussion. And it's pretty systemic at a football wide level. And it's just fairly rancid. But then there are always these high points. There are things like 1882 that's going on at the moment. There are things like the Homesdale Fanatics. There are clubs like St. Pauli that kind of rub against the grain still. So I guess you just have to define new parameters within things. You have to, you know, accept that maybe that top level of competition is off the menu and look forward to just taking each game as it comes more now, you know, to not looking at, games like Cardiff away and hope, you know, just expecting that we're going to win and getting pissed off if we don't. Actually, maybe, you know, we should enjoy every game as we once did as Spurs fans. Maybe that's part of what's missing. And also just not relentlessly bitching about everything on Twitter all the time. And I'm as guilty of that as the next person. But yeah, it's been a decent episode tonight, I think, mate. It's been a pleasure talking to you as always, Raj. I just wanted to move on quite quickly. I hear you've been having a bit of trouble, haven't you, mate? Like some lad in your locale's been, you know, listeners, if any of you live in Yorkshire and you're pretty hard, Raj might need a bit of backup soon because he's been getting some threatening phone calls. Do you want to go into that a bit more, Raj?
I think it was Friday night at 3:30 in the morning, and I slept through a phone call.
What was his name? What's the name of the lad?
Well, do you want the caller ID that was on the phone or the voicemail that was left in tow?
Not so much the caller ID, perhaps. Just like what was the name of the bloke that he said?
He went by the name Barry. And he had this strange concoction of some sort of Yorkshire Scouse accent where he was skirting around some fairly...
Could he have sounded perhaps like a lad that's grown up outside of Yorkshire but maybe has, like, I don't know, like a mum that's from Yorkshire or something?
Something like that. I mean, I'm not sure whether or not you could relate to him, but, it's quite a funny listen. I mean, if we're going to be honest about it, it was you, wasn't it, Jack?
Well, it was my birthday. Happy birthday. Thank you very much, everyone.
Happy 30th.
No, 29.
I know, I was taking a piss.
You whippersnapper, right? There's a year to go, yeah. Christ, I called you a whippersnapper. I'm calling girls young lady. Jesus, what's happening to me? Yeah, it was my birthday and I got very drunk. And I just wanted to call you and tell you that I liked you, Raj, I was a bit drunk and feeling affectionate.
I know it warmed my heart that the first person you'd think of to send abuse to at 3:30 in the morning when you're slightly paggard and worse for wear was myself. So when I woke up in the morning and I listened to the message and I saw that... Because you tried to ring me twice. I mean, the first time you kind of burped down the phone and left a message there.
Oh, did I? Did that actually happen?
Yeah, and then the second one, you actually managed to get out some sort of, like, rancid half-Yorkshire bile that you were trying to feed me. But what I'll do is... because you couldn't actually remember what you'd said to me, I had to, the other day, record the voicemail and put it onto my computer so that I could email you the audio of it. So what I'll do is, now that we've spoken about it on air, I'll tag it onto the end of the podcast just so anyone can listen to the message that Barry sent me and see just how good Jack's impression of my voice is.
I mean, what you're saying, though, the worst thing about this is me trying to pretend I was this Barry figure. I didn't even fucking withhold my ID.
No, that was genuinely the best part.
I just thought that, like, as you said it, you were like, why did you call me and pretend your name was Barry? And I was just like, fuck! The second I thought about it, that I hadn't even withheld my ID.
I actually texted you the next morning to say it. You sent me one text with then like a split second of the other, and you went, "Eh, what?" And then you went, "Oh shit, yeah, I did, didn't I?" But yeah, I mean, if we're gonna move on and do the admin, I think we asked for last week was we asked for somebody to leave us iTunes, what they're called, reviews and what have you, and leave us a 5-star rating and that. And I think one that's done the rounds and one that we got sent a screenshot of was somebody who went by... Have you read this?
I have. I think it's fantastic.
The one that's called Great Listen 5-star by Ahidub, 27th of February. So it's what, last week? It starts off well. It says, fantastic podcast, funny and informative. I think we'll take that. I think that's what we aim for.
Out and out lie, but, you know, thank you.
Then, you know, home truths come. Jack is great, even if Spurs put him on the verge of tears each week. Which I think, you know, this episode is just pretty much fucking proven.
Most things put me on the verge of tears, to be honest, mate.
This is the sentence that, you know, sits uncomfortably with myself. Only only gripe. Fuck me. It even sounds Yorkshire, that phrase. only gripe is that Carl Pilkington is a lot funnier in An Idiot Abroad than he is in this podcast. Although, this is the bit that actually hurt. Although I'm surprised by his football knowledge. I mean, it's very nice of him to call us funny and informative and say we're fantastic.
That was probably me more so, to be honest, that part, I think.
Yeah. Only gripe is that Carl Pilkington is a lot funnier on An Idiot Abroad. It's a joke that has, like, eaten itself now and gone far beyond the pale.
It has done, but I like it, and I think it's got to stay, Carl. As does... Well, I'm not going to start talking about True Detective because not everyone's on the same level as us with True Detective. So you might be watching on Sky Atlantic. But basically, the spaghetti monster's coming to get you. That's it.
The spaghetti monster. It sounds like a fucking kid show. It's not an episode of Scooby-Doo. Matthew McConaughey is running around doing that, the fucking Benny Hill music with Woody Harrelson chasing him.
With like a man in like a giant mop type costume.
If we were in Scooby-Doo, you'd be Shaggy. And that, I think that would probably...
Yeah, I would. By name and by nature.
And then what would that leave me? Would I be... Is calling me Scooby-Doo slightly racist? I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know, but I'm not going to go on to a topic such as that. What with the article that I may have going up this week?
Yeah, we'll leave that to Sol Campbell.
There we go. Exactly. It's okay. So I'm writing a piece about Sol Campbell and his the reaction to what he said during the week. I don't want to go on about it too much now because it's a big topic and we've gas bagged enough for one evening. But is there anything else going up on the site this week at all, mate?
Rob will send us a preview, I imagine, of the game from wherever he is hiding in Argentina.
Rather have a report detailing his sexual escapades through South America, to be honest.
The thing is, I think he purposely doesn't listen to us anymore because he knows that we sort of detail what he does in his wicked ways around Argentina.
He's a dirty, dirty man.
I mean, there's going to be more ginger people in the next 9 months in Argentina than there ever has been before. But yeah, he'll send us a really good statistical and tactical preview of the Chelsea game. So that'll be up, and whatever else we can get our hands on will be up. We've probably got a youth update as well for February now that the month has changed. That'll be going up as well soon. So keep an eye out for that.
And like I say, when we do say the site, we mean www.spursstatman.com, where you will find these articles that we're talking about, loads of other stuff, as well as all the previous episodes of Rule the Roost podcast, which can also be found on our Buzzsprout website, website, which will be tweeted out, as will our iTunes site. You can follow the Rule the Roost Twitter account at RTRSSM. Thank you very much for listening. As ever, I have been to Trunk. I've been joined by Baines, and you lot are a load of bastards. Come on, you Spurs.
Hi,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.